You ever seen that show Cops? I was watching it one time, and there was this cop on. He was talking about this gunfight he had in the hallway with this guy, right? And he just unloaded on this guy, and nothing happened. He didn't hit nothing. Okay, it was just him and this guy. I mean, you know, it's freaky, but it happens.
Look, you want to play blind man, go walk with the shepherd. But me, my eyes are wide fucking open.
What the fuck does that mean?
I mean, that's it for me. From here on in, you can consider my ass retired.
Jesus Christ.
Don't blaspheme.
God damn it,
I said, don't do that.
Hey, you know, fuck, you're fucking freaking out on us.
Look, I'm telling Marcellus today. I'm through.
But why don't you tell him at the same time why?
Don't worry, I will.
Yeah, and I'll bet you $10,000 he laughs his ass off.
I don't give a damn if he does.
Marvin, what do you make of all this?
Man, I don't even have an opinion.
Well, you gotta have an opinion. I mean, do you think that God came down from heaven and stopped... Oh!
What the fuck's happening?
Oh, man. Oh, man, I shot Marvin in the face.
Why the fuck did you do that?
I didn't mean to do it as an accident. Hookah, shaka, hookah, hookah,
hookah, shaka, hookah, hookah. I can't stop this feeling deep inside of me. Girl, you just don't realize what you do to me. When you hold me in your arms so tight, you let me know everything's alright. I'm hooked on a feeling. I'm high on believing that you're
So hi and welcome to the Unnamed Podcast. This is Andrew.
This is Douglas.
And this is CNN. Or Damon.
Or as I like to call him, no longer number one in fantasy football.
Oh yeah. He passed me. Ah. All right. The game is on. Okay. I like this. I like the hostility. This is fun.
Oh. I don't know why. I know it's poor form of me to take that stance so early.
Yeah, I remember the last time.
I have
time,
to take it while I can.
I remember the I last time someone can. Said that to me. It was a couple of years ago. A young man named Levi said something about it. Something was in my face. I don't remember how the story was. And at the end of the season, I couldn't find him. That was fun. So, Andrew, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
How's Kenya?
Kenya? Mm-hmm. What the fuck's with Kenya?
Isn't he in Kenya? Where is Andrew?
I am in Trinidad.
Oh, right, so. Trinidad. Same difference. Are you on holiday again? Another bullshit ass religious
sadly,
holiday?
Sadly, there are no other holidays between now and Christmas.
Sadly.
I actually have to be at work every day.
Sadly.
Can you believe it? Ridiculous. The audacity of
right.
these people.
Why have 19 different religions if I can't exploit all of them?
But anyways, let's get on to what we've been watching. Douglas. No, I believe you're back at work now. How has been the Lazy
work.
Bastard Festival?
The Lazy Bastard Festival did not go very well. However, I still did get a couple of flicks. Yes.
So question, before you get to your flick, since you say the lazy ass bastard didn't go very well, when you say that, do you mean it in the way that I predicted it would go?
No, not quite. What really happened was that Douglas, foreseeing the Lazy Bastard Film Fest, went out and bought himself a new system, a new multimedia system that he could hook up to his TV as soon as he got back from St. Thomas. When he got back from St. Thomas, he took out the motherboard, he plugged in the CPU and the CPU fan and heatsink, all of the two sticks of RAM, shoved it in the case that he bought, and stopped for a moment and wondered why it was so tightly fitting. But it's okay, because he could just pull out the power supply and push it in underneath. Then he realizes that the motherboard actually is too wide for the case. Why would that be? Oh, wait, it's because he bought the wrong sized case. So, I had to wait another week for a proper case to come down. And when I did, I plug everything in and then realize, wait, this case didn't come with a power supply. So instead of waiting for another power supply to come down, I actually did use a mini ITX power supply on a micro ATX case, which means that there is a gaping hole where the power supply should be fitting. But it does work. Very loudly, but it works. And that got fixed probably, I don't know, a week ago. So my film fest was cut short by about a week, or well, more like a week and a half. So I didn't get that much in. We started talking last week about what I did get in, but now we can continue to the dregs, the tail end of the.
All
the
I'm festival. Hearing is that Douglas is bad at computers. That's basically what I know.
Basically, okay, okay. Yeah. Right. So, there were a couple of flicks that I got in last week before the end of the festival, and there were two of them. One, let's start off with this year's installment, or this year's movie, and that would be The Amazing Spider-Man. It's actually an alright movie. It was pretty decent, I thought. It was entertaining. It was fun. Exactly. It was
Spider-Man again.
But, you say it exactly, but it was just Spider-Man again. There was, if you take out the details of this movie, right? Take out the fact that it's the Lizard and not the Hobgoblin. Take out the fact that it's Martin Sheen and not whoever the hell else was in it in the old movies. Take out all the details that don't really count. And this is almost a
paint by numbers.
Yeah, it's essentially a carbon copy of Sam Raimi's first installment, which kind of saddened me and made me conflicted, because I did enjoy it, but I want to enjoy it less. Because it's like, it's not really, it's a movie that I saw, I don't think it's as short as 5 years ago, but let's say it's 10. A movie I saw 10 years ago that I loved to death, and that had so many great, you know, people behind it and in it.
I only really love the second Spider-Man movie.
What? No, the second Spider-Man is great, but both the first two are amazing.
The first one was just Welcome to Spider-Man. And this is what this one feels like.
Yeah.
You know, we have to... All right, guys, this is Spider-Man. And I think, going forward, we should just skip this, like, first step with all comic book.
Well, like, not the not big all. Ones. The, no. Wait, even the big ones. I think any movie that... Any one of the comic movies that don't have any previous installments...
I do agree.
No, they don't have to. They can if they want to. I'm fine with that. But they don't have to skip right. it. I'd be fine with them putting in the origins. So
if they do... who's, like, another big comic book person?
Aquaman!
Alright, like the Justice League. Let's say Warner Brothers gets their shit together.
Yeah.
Launches the Superman movie and then decides to... build a Justice League, like the Avengers thing. All of the Justice League people are so well known that they can just jump headfirst into the action-y path, blowing up shit and putting everybody in danger. We don't need to get to know these characters, I don't think. Because even in the Avengers movie, Hawkeye, they didn't really give us a backstory or anything. He's just a guy that can shoot arrows. And he was in the first Hulk movie for a frame, and then he came
was
in.
Was he in the Hulk movie?
No, it was. Yeah,
it was
no,
a Thor, Thor film.
No, yeah, he was in Thor for a frame.
And then he was in the Avengers movie, shooting shit. And you went, yeah, I don't care who that guy is. He's awesome.
It does help that he was backstory. The stupidest character of the Avengers film.
Not sure. So you know, backstories for comic book characters kind of ridiculous. They're paper thin.
Like what they did in Batman Begins?
Yeah.
Okay.
If they just jumped into Dark Knight, Douglas, say there was no Batman Begins, if Chris Nolan had just made Dark Knight, would it have been a less movie?
Wait,
no.
Did you like Batman Begins?
Yeah.
All right, shush.
Yeah, but it's not necessary.
Fair enough. But yes, one thing that also annoyed me was there were certain elements that I had to speak with about this movie. And those elements pointed to all of these gaping holes. And before I even discuss anything, I'd like to ask, because I think both of you have seen this movie already. Mm-hmm. Would you say that there are any real big holes in this movie that matter?
That matter, not really, because it's a shitty Spider-Man movie. but were there holes? Yeah. There was holes. There's a lot of questions specifically about what happened to his parents.
Come on.
They kind of...
I had the same argument, and I was like,
that they kind of just went,
they,
you know what?
They kind of brush over it, but that's fine, because guess what? It's Spider-Man. The parents leave, and you're like, oh, they probably die.
Mm-hmm.
Then you find out, wait, he did die. What's the issue? I don't really care about that.
No, and like, the fact that, like, the scientist was working on this theory for years, and then he got bit by a spider, took one look at it, and went, oh, this is how all this shit works. Like,
yes, that was ridiculous.
Even
but again, this is the sort of thing that I put down to, like, action movie-itis, right? Mm. You kind of just go with the flow, unless there is something ridiculous. And that's not ridiculous enough for me to... Really,
no, there wasn't anything that caused me to, like, had to pause and go, wow, that shit is... and then moved on. But
yes.
It was okay.
Anyway, I watched this movie. It was pretty decent, yet somehow not quite fulfilling.
As long as they made the second one awesome.
Yeah.
Because Sony was running out of time, so they had to make one real quick. So they just went, this is what Sam Raimi did. Just put new people in it, and let's go.
Which is funny. Did you know that apparently, what's Peter Parker's name? What's his name again?
Andrew Garfield.
Andrew Garfield, thank you. Andrew Garfield is actually older in this movie than Tobey Maguire was in his first movie. He doesn't look it at all. Garfield just looks like magic. This teenager guy.
It's movie magic.
I know. Anyway, the second movie I watched, which is more deserving of perhaps a mention of a festival, was Rebecca, the Alfred Hitchcock movie starring Sir Laurence Olivier, about Mandalay and all sorts of fun and creepy things, as is any real Hitchcock movie. I have to say I had mixed feelings about this movie. I see Andrew over there nodding, and I'm not quite sure because he's smiling, and I'm not sure if he's smiling because he's about to agree with me panning this movie.
Negative.
or if he's smiling because he's trying not to cuss me out.
Pretty much the second one.
But I'm not about to pan this movie, Andrew. So you can't get the first.
No, he's still going to be angry. I was waiting for you to finish.
Okay.
No matter what you say, you've already not given this movie 100%.
No, it's not 100%.
Andrew's anger.
But hold on, let me tell you why though. And it's okay. So it's hard to describe too. It's kind of what I feel about a lot of old movies, a lot of older movies, and that's why I don't want to say it's a bad movie. And I don't want to say that, you know, it wasn't entertaining and X and Y and Z. Mm-hmm. But there are certain standards of thing in terms of acting and direction that have been developed over the years that have become, you know, extremely, well, I would say extremely good, but we are all, I guess, right here, right now, and this is all we're seeing, and 20 years down the line, or 40 years down the line, somebody's going to say the same thing about us and them, yes.
Someone's going to be like, Lupo is such shit.
I know, right? Because look at how they do that in 2D, and no holograms, but whatever.
Shitty acting.
Exactly.
Terrible accent work.
Who thought Bruce Willis was a good pick?
But the issue I have with a lot of older movies is that the acting a lot of the time seems forced, right? The way they interact with each other doesn't actually feel like real people interacting with each other. And as I say, that is just an idiosyncrasy of the time, right? Because I see it all over the place. And also, the way that the movie is cut as well is a little bit jerky. And again, that's kind of the times. But that said, the concept of the film, the actual story, you know, this girl getting married very quickly to this guy, going, you know, jumping headfirst into this new situation and kind of getting creeped out, rightfully so, and you know, that development of that story and the twists and all of that. It was a pretty good, you know, pretty good story. And, you know, so I'd say this is a pretty decent movie, obviously.
My question to you, Douglas, is what did you think of that pivotal end scene that is typical in most Hitchcock films when the mystery is basically revealed?
I'm trying to think of which one is pivotal. Are you talking about when they actually introduce a twist?
It's a huge dialogue scene when
they introduce a twist. It's the wife and the husband conversing mm-hmm. about. Okay, yes. I think again, in terms of the acting, it's a wee bit over exaggerated. A wee bit not, you know, representative of people actually talking to each other, but as
you weren't alive then, you don't know.
I don't know, right? Whatever. But as a mechanism for telling the story, as a mechanism for getting the point across, I'm kind of okay with that. It's kind of like the style, you know. It's definitely Hitchcock style, and
no, it's not.
What?
Every time I hear someone say anything, and then it is bookended with style, I think of Gundam style.
Which is officially the most watched video on YouTube ever.
It's the most watched video in the world. We don't have to use YouTube. In the world, ever. In the world.
Oh, jeez. Oh, can we never mention that thing again? No. So, Douglas, as to your comments against Rebecca, I was willing to allow and forgive everything you said until you tried to put it into that amazing scene at the end of the film. So, you're wrong. And we can move on.
No, I mean, it's... I mean,
the
one
movie
of the...
God has spoken.
Okay, but I'd just like to say that Sir Laurence Olivier was public offender number one. Just letting you know, right?
I will say this, though. I saw that film for the first time, I think around a year ago. I went through a Hitchcock stage. Mm-hmm. I went from Rebecca to Psycho. I just watched everything in between.
Yeah. By the way, Rebecca is his first movie.
I know that. That's...
Okay. That is an irrelevant point, but sure.
I just stated the stage in which I watched. I know there's still a lot more for me to peruse. The Rebecca was one of my least favorite of his that I saw when I went through those films.
No, what you see, the thing about Rebecca, and like I'm trying not to panic, because the story itself and like a lot of the elements of the movie were great, and I think it just really did suffer from those two big, you know, things that I spoke about before, you know, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just what they were doing then, you know.
And
so that made it a little bit harder for me to enjoy it, but I still, on some level, did enjoy this movie. And there's no way that I I could say that the story was horrible. It was a very interesting and intriguing story, and it definitely kept me. You know, I wasn't really looking at the watch or anything like that. I was there the whole way through.
So what else have you seen this week, Douglas?
One last thing. I watched a TV show by the name of Falcone. Now, this TV show is about... it's kind of a cop show, sort of. It's about a policeman in Seville, which is in Spain, by the way, if you don't know this, Central. And...
He has on a Valencia shirt. It would be really sad if he didn't know.
It would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it's Andrew. All right, never mind. Moving on.
And, okay, so he is clearly not doing well in life, right? He's separated from his wife. He looks to be taking some kind of drugs. And he's, I think I said it before, but I'll say it again, head of police. And there's this murderer guy around, I guess, because there are two, like, clearly related murders that were fairly brutal. And he's going around and trying to solve the mystery. And, you know, things... I guess it's just one of those cop shows. And it definitely looks to follow the... This is a British show, by the way. It definitely looks...
I kind of figured.
Yeah, to follow the usual British miniseries sort of formula. And I like that one, yeah.
Should we call them miniseries if all of them are like... Every single British show is like six... Between four and six episodes.
I know,
can we
right?
just call them series? Because it's never going to change. I don't see a... British TV show have you like 26 episodes of Caesar.
There are a few like MI5 is one of them, which I started to watch, which is pretty decent, and there are a couple others like one.
We should call those extended series. Just call these series.
Yeah.
So is it good?
It's alright. So the thing about this show, right, I've only seen one episode.
Okay.
I do like what I've seen so far. I think it has a lot of potential, but I have a feeling, and this might get blown away in the second episode, but I have a feeling that it's trying a bit too hard to be what other English shows have been in terms of, you know, like this gritty, hard kind of real television show, as opposed to, let's just say, you know, a goofy American show, whatever, right? So it's a lot of the things that happen kind of feel like they're happening for their own sake, not really to do much in terms of storytelling. So I'm not sure, but I do hope that I'm wrong, that my gut is wrong. But casting that inhibition aside, I am liking the show so far. But there's one minor detail that strikes me as quite funny. As I said before, this is a British show. It is also about people in Seville. I'm pretty sure, given the last names, these are all supposed to be local people born in Seville or some part of Spain. Yet each and every one of them have... What would you call
nominal
it?
Nominal English accent.
British accents. Yes, that's what you would say.
Nominal British accent.
And I think that is hilarious. I mean,
remember Valkyrie, the Tom Cruise?
Yeah, no,
movie.
They didn't even do that.
They didn't even do the transition thing.
No,
they,
there was
they
no
just
transition.
They start out and they're like, yeah. We speak perfect English here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Not. Yeah.
Would it be worse if they tried like the typical Spanish accent?
No, I think it would be. And okay. And that's why I'm not really holding it too much against them. I just find it a little bit funny. Okay.
Fair enough.
But that is all that I've watched this week.
Okay.
Damien.
Why me?
What say you?
I haven't seen that much. I'll start off with what is one of the worst movies probably of all time. Sigourney Weaver and Drew Barrymore made a movie recently. It is a movie about vampires. Wow. And it is called Vamps.
Is that what that movie is?
Yes, that is what that movie is. Okay. It also stars the girl from Don't Trust a Bitch in Apartment 23. The movie is terrible. There's times when it starts to make the loop to come around to be good, but then it is clear that whoever wrote this movie just wasn't good enough, or whoever was doing the direction didn't see how to take the loop back around. It's about vampires in modern day, and they were essentially trying to make Clueless but with vampires. And there are some funny bits there, but it is so woefully lacking and so just dumb. But not the... Remember the first time you saw a scary movie and you went, that's dumb, but that's kind of funny. You start to get that sense here, but then the dumb outweighs the funny so much that by the end of the movie, you just go, This is really dumb. I'll give you an example. And none of you should ever watch this movie, so I'm going to spoil the ending. Sigourney Weaver is... let's call her a super vampire. Right? And they have to murder her for whatever reason. They cut off her head. And then she reassembles her head on top of a skeleton body. And you see that and you go, I know when they wrote that, they thought that would have been funny. That is just dumb. It is not funny at all. So the movie is terrible. And I was kind of hoping, because I knew the movie was going to be bad. It's called Vamps. But I was kind of hoping, like, maybe it would make the loop, but it really didn't. It was just terrible for long stretches with small funny bits in the middle. The only other thing that I'll talk about is that our friends at Criterion put out the Blu-ray for The Following.
Oh, they have?
Yes, they have.
Okay. Isn't it not released yet? Isn't it next month it's coming out? Yes,
they're putting it out. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went back and I saw The Following. You know, we've talked about that many times. My question is, if they can do whatever they do, wave their magic wand or pixie dust or whatever, to get a movie of such shitty quality as The Following into a high def state, there are far superior movies out there that still have not yet been brought up to date. The one that I keep shouting for is Ikiru. For obvious reasons, my favorite movie of all time.
Isn't Ikiru already in the Criterion Collection?
Yes, but there's no Blu-ray for it.
Well, it's just for them to decide to reissue it, yes. And then they'll do a remastering of it.
But they are doing updates to worse films. Wouldn't you just do the best ones and get them out of the way early?
That's like saying with every new format that comes out, instead of spending time adding new films to the collection, they should just be reissuing the best of the best.
That is exactly what I'm saying, Andrew. That is pretty much exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that as soon as Blu-ray came out and I had a Blu-ray player, there were some movies that I waited a few years in order to get on Blu-ray. I won't name some of them because some of them are a little unworthy, but there were definitely movies that I waited for.
I went through and I was looking at movies that I have that are like, I'm just stunned that there's no one has spent the time. 4 months, 3 weeks, 2 days, that movie. That doesn't have one, which is a crime for some movies. I mean, that movie won the Cannes Film Festival. The movie's great, and still, no one has sat down and gone, maybe we should do something to this. Bad Boys 2. Hey, guys.
Oh, hey, guys. Damien.
Guys.
Damien.
What the fuck?
Guys, listen, Damien, Bad Boys 2, Bad Boys 2 was horrible.
Douglas, that is not the point. Bad Boys 1 is
Bad Boys
in Blu-ray.
1 is awesome.
Right?
Bad That's Boys why it's in Blu-ray.
Douglas, do you remember that car scene in Bad Boys 2 when they were driving down the street?
And the cars were coming
yeah.
down at them?
You remember the first time you saw that?
Yes, I do.
Your brain blew up. It is just... Like, when I saw the following, I realized that not only are they moving away from what we consider high def TV in a month's time, because January is around the corner, they're going to transition into even higher def. The thing is, though, that the jump from Blu-ray, the jump from DVD to Blu-ray was so sick, it was so vast, so much better that Even people who have seen, the few people that have seen 4K TVs have said that while from Blu-ray, from DVD to 1080p, the upscalers did a horrendous job because there wasn't that much information. From Blu-ray to 4K, the upscalers work perfect because it's they have all that information. You're just making one pixel into four. But the size of the screen hasn't blown up enough where that is really an issue. You just made essentially a crisper pixel. And so I don't want, in a year's time, because I won't be getting a 4K TV this year, I'm pretty sure I'll be able to spend less than $5,000 next year and get one. And I don't want this transition to leave certain movies behind. I don't want certain great movies to be forgotten, and that is my fear. I don't want in 4 years' time for somebody to remember that, you know, oh, this is the 100th anniversary of this thing. Let's put it out. I don't understand why The Wire is not on. Like, what the hell are they waiting for? I don't care. All the
reasons. Has Criterion ever released television?
No, I'm not talking about Criterion. I'm just talking about updates in general.
Oh, okay.
How is it that the argument for The Wire was that they shot it on terrible cameras. Seinfeld in HD looks wonderful.
That's because...
Is Seinfeld out in HD?
Yeah, you can get some other episodes. TBS, one of those channels.
No matter what camera you use, though, you can always master it and get it to an adequate enough
They did
definition.
Whatever they did, and yeah. It looks... I saw a lot of some of the episodes on the internet, and it's worlds better, right? And that's Seinfeld. Seinfeld is not like the argument that Blu-ray will, like, putting it in HD will only make it incrementally better is a lie. Having it look better makes it better. Instead of my mind having to lie to me and see things that aren't there, why don't they just spend the time? It's kind of aggravating, and they're moving away. 8K is around the corner. Am I supposed to wait even longer for some of these movies? It's not like these studios have anything better to do with their money. They're remaking Total Recall and shit like that. Why not spend the money?
No. To be fair, they've been trying hard to give us good movies like John Carter
and Vamps.
and also, Twilight. I could be wrong about this, and this has to do more with Criterion than anyone else, is that when they buy the rights to a film, they buy the rights for a certain amount of releases, a certain amount of prints.
Yeah.
So they'll buy 1,000 Rashomon, which just got a release on Blu-ray. And then when it's done, they have to wait to get the rights again for another re-release, which is why we don't see Ikiru come out again.
This is ridiculous.
At least that's what I believe. I could be completely wrong on that.
Yeah. Alright, anyway. I saw some TV shows, but none of those are important. Andrew, what have you seen?
Okay, so the first thing I want to talk about is I decided to start watching The West Wing. I kind of made the subconscious decision that I want to go through Aaron Sorkin's television shows, which is why I watched Sportsnet to begin with, which I enjoyed a lot. The West Wing, I didn't really have any basis to go off of, and I guess the most surprising thing for me watching this show was that...
Andrew?
Andrew? What did I do?
Nothing.
Douglas is an idiot. Can you continue, please?
He knows I want to know.
Andrew, did you make a subconscious decision?
Mm-hmm. Oh, fuck.
Did you actively make a subconscious decision? Or wait, no, there's no other way for me to say.
Oh. Douglas, he made the decision with his converse with his subconscious. And they came.
He made it subconscious.
His conscious and subconscious had a meeting.
Did he consciously make a subconscious decision? Yes, I'm pretty sure that's what he just said.
I'm pretty sure that's what he said. Can we move on now? Can you stop being a child?
Sometimes I think we do this podcast so just so Douglas can find these things.
I'm sorry, Andrew.
Right. I guess what surprised me the most watching this show now is how episodic it is, how much of a capsule each episode is. Because when you watch The Newsroom or you watch Sports Night or even there was another Sorkin show. Can't remember right now. He always had threads that went throughout the entire season, and in The West Wing, it's almost as if there are none. I mean, in the final episode of the first season, which is where I've reached, they did bring like a few things back from the season. But if you watched the 21 episodes before that, absolutely none of them had anything to do with each other, pretty much. And while the writing and the characters are entertaining and I enjoy them, it felt kind of throwaway for most of the show for me. The only other thing I want to talk about is I once again made a subconscious decision to start going through the canon of John Cassavetes.
Yes. He subconsciously put that on his website.
I subconsciously did it. I thought of it and then it just appeared on the website, which is why it has all sorts of typos. The first film I watched was his first movie, Shadows, which I found oddly interesting because it almost has very little direction throughout the movie. It's about an individual who is going around town in the hip world, in the jazz filled world, the music filled world, and it's very much in the vein of the Truffaut and the Godard movies, and it kind of moves from one point of focus to another throughout the movie. It starts out with Benny, who, as I said, is this guy who just jumps around in the musical world but doesn't really do much. And then it jumps to Hugh, who is his brother, and he is actually a singer and about his life. And then it jumps to his sister. But while you can see the family connection, there isn't very much else to put these things together. And then it kind of hits you at the end of the movie when the credits are coming up, and it says that this movie was a complete improvisation. So you start to understand that Cassavetes was basically experimenting for the whole time, and he probably shot around 5 hours of footage, but we're now only seeing a 70-minute cut, which, when I did a little reading, apparently is even shorter than the real original cut, because parts were missing, parts were lost. I'm not gonna say that this whole decision to watch these Cassavetes films have started out on a great point, but it it does kind of echo a lot of the things I've heard of his filmmaking, noticing those connections with Truffaut and Godard and the French New Wave as it was back then in 59. Have either of you ever seen this film or any of Cassavetes' films?
I don't know if I've seen, I haven't seen any of this one. Which one did you say it was, sorry?
Shadows.
Shadows? No, I don't think I've seen this one.
Damien, you said you've seen a Cassavetes film?
I'm pretty sure I have. Looking all right, through
how are you talking about the ones he directed or the ones that he was just in? He was in Columbo, or he directed Columbo. I saw that.
thank you, Douglas. And one more question while we're at it.
I'm not sure. I'd have to.
No, I don't think I've. Check. I don't think I've watched any of these movies. I've seen any of this.
Okay. Well, I'm going to try and get through all of these films before the end of the year. That's my assignment to myself. But that's pretty much what I've been watching, other than a lot of shitty movies.
I keep hearing you're concerned about my happiness, but all that thought you're giving me is conscience, I guess. If I were walking in your shoes, I wouldn't worry none. Are you no friends or worried about me? I'm having lots of fun. Counting flowers on the wall, that don't bother me at all. Playing solitaire till dawn with the deck of 51.
So moving on into trailers. So one of the trailers I want to talk about this week is for the film Broken. It stars Tim Roth and Cillian Murphy, and it seems to be about a man who is beaten one day because he looks at a little girl weirdly, and things happen otherwise.
Archie, it's Tuesday. I waited.
Can I play you tonight? Promise.
I'll be out and about.
Right.
No, look, stop.
Hi, guys.
You dirty pup.
Hi, Rick.
Hi, Scott.
Hi, Mr. Oswald.
Right, darling.
I don't get it. Why is Rick the one they arrest?
Get a straight jacket!
He hit him really hard, Dad.
You want to stay with you?
Douglas, what did you think of this trailer?
Remind me again. What did you start off saying? That this star is who?
Cillian Murphy.
Stop!
And
stop,
Tim
stop,
Roth.
Stop right there. That's all I needed to know. Okay. This is starring Cillian Murphy. This trailer is horrible. This trailer was so bad that I realized about 2 seconds before it finished that I had already zoned out and have no clue what the trailer actually said. The trailer was all over the place. I do remember vaguely seeing somebody catching a beatdown. But the truth of the matter is, Andrew, there's one thing, and one thing alone that I care about this trailer, and that is that Cillian Murphy is in this movie. I have so much faith in that guy. I know he's been in bad movies. Tron for one.
Tron.
And Tron for two. But I have to watch any movie with him in it anyway. And so the fact that he's in this trailer is about the only redeeming factor that there is. Andrew?
Damien?
Oh, sure. This trailer was really bad. I have... outside of Cillian Murphy, which obviously all of us here like him, I also like Tim Roth. He was in that Lie to Me series, and... I mean, I'd liked him before that he was in a lot of movies, but I really grew to love him as an actor thanks to that series. And so having him in the movie is a plus, having Murphy in the movie. But if we're just going to go by what the trailer is a disjointed mess. I don't know how you got any of that information that you got about this river. It just seemed all over the place and just really bad. It felt kind of Lifetime-y, like one of those sad movies that aren't going anywhere. It looks really, really bad. But there's actors in there that I like, and there's no point, you know, pretending that we watch movies for any other reason. We'll find all sorts of ridiculous, super specific, sometimes nonsensical reasons for watching these movies. I don't know why we think we have to justify watching these movies for ourselves, but we do. And this is definitely one that needs justification, because the trailer itself, the thing that should get you to watch the movie, has failed at its job. So I guess we're grasping at straws. Andrew, you forced us to watch this trailer. I'm assuming you loved it.
I found things to like, and I think it had to do with a couple bits and pieces, but I agree wholeheartedly that as a whole it does kind of stretch itself thin. I think especially the introduction of the trailer where you see the child talking to Tim Roth and she's like, "What would you do if I died?" And you see her there pretend to die, like just choked to death or whatever. And it just breaks into this little comedic moment, which I loved. And then it moves into the scene, which I kind of mentioned, of this weird guy is staring at this young girl, and then it just turns into this beatdown scene where the child walks away, and then you just see a guy in the corner of the frame just take off his shirt and just start beating this guy. And the way that it looks, I kind of think it looks like it was done really well, like visually, and it gave me something to look forward to. I mean, additional to what we've already mentioned, the Cillian Murphy and the Tim Roth love. And that's kind of what I latched on to when I saw this trailer. And I kind of hope that you guys had that same viewpoint. But sadly, I'm going to be the one defender of this movie, this trailer, because we haven't seen the movie just yet. But it looks like it could turn out good. I don't know. The other trailer I wanted to talk about is I Give It a Year. This new comedy headlined by Rose Byrne of Bridesmaids and X-Men First Class fame.
4nication. I'll read that again. 4nication. Like this. I want to make sure I keep up the traditions of being a best man. Apparently I need to get the groom to the church on time. Tick. I need to remember the rings. Did that. And I need to have sex with a bridesmaid. Maybe when they're older.
Happy 10-day anniversary.
What is it?
I saw you looking at it online the other day.
Two Asian lesbians and a man who looks like a fat Jesus.
I thought I got it made. I married a doctor.
First word. Red.
Sick. Lazy. Uh-huh. Stupid. Disappointment. That was 9 months ago.
Damien, you being the comedy guru of the podcast.
Sure. I'd accept that.
What did you think about this trailer?
It looks funny, definitely, but it also looks like it could go kind of bad. I'm hoping that it's going to be more of a horrible bosses type of funny, because that's clearly what they're going for. They're going for a more adult humor, and I kind of like that. Most of the comedies that we've been seeing lately are definitely going towards that. They're moving away from the sophomore humor. It's not just all dick jokes and stuff like that. There are still those jokes, of course, but they're making it less Van Wilder and more Horrible Bosses. That's what most of the comedies that I've seen this year, that's kind of the aim. And this one looks like that. It looks kind of funny. I definitely paused when I saw Anna Faris there. She is usually a beacon for terrible movies. We'd go through her filmography, but that's a waste of time. But definitely Rose Byrne. I liked her in X-Men First Class. I liked her in Bridesmaids. And there's a lot of other characters there that that I really like. And so I'm hoping, I mean, and of course the trailer was pretty funny, so I don't want to take, I don't want people to think that I'm trying to find some like external reason to like the trailer. The trailer itself was funny enough and made
when
me
your
want
trailer
to watch
starts
it.
Out with Stephen Merchant mispronouncing something into the word fornication.
And
I think it's a good...
And proposing sex to 2 8-year-old girls. Maybe later in their life. They've already set a tone. And so, yeah, it looks like it's going to be funny. I just hope that it's more than just, oh, this was a little funny. I want it to be really funny. Something that people will remember.
Boy, Damien,
mm-hmm.
I don't know how much I agree with you here, you know.
Okay.
Do
I have to step outside?
No, you don't have to step outside. So, I've seen trailers like this before.
Okay.
And while I agree, mm-hmm. by themselves, they show promise, they show potential. But, you see, there's this big thing, there's this thing called context, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have seen the funniest jokes in a trailer bomb like crazy. I mean, you pointed out Stephen Merchant, who, by the way, Stephen Merchant is great. I enjoyed him in all of the Ricky Gervais things that he's done. I didn't, however, enjoy him in Hall Pass. Why? Because it's a terrible movie.
I still haven't seen that movie, thank God.
But I don't remember watching the trailer. I probably did, but I challenge you to find a trailer for Hall Pass that probably wasn't at least as funny as this trailer.
No, I remember the trailers. They were pretty bad.
They were bad?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
the only good thing about the trailer was when he did the thing about, you know, blocking out the two ugly girls and making her funny. That was the only funny part about those entire trailers.
So the thing about this trailer, right, is that it cuts up a lot of jokes that aren't really that funny, but are kind of funny. They're, you know, they're workable. And put them all together. And you kind of say, well, doesn't look that bad. But were there any really standout jokes in this trailer? Were there any jokes that you were like, that's really funny? And I'm not saying that that's necessary, mm-hmm. right? I'm not saying that means if you don't have that, it's not going to be a good movie, or the other way around. What I'm saying is that I've been duped by trailers like this before. What Andro has done here with these two trailers is he's given us trailers with a couple very large similarities. One, the trailers aren't really that great. Neither of them.
Disagree with that.
Not that. This one.
The first trailer is bad.
The first trailer is bad. This one is not bad, no. Right? I'll give you that. There's no way for you to say this is bad. This, it's alright.
Alright.
Right? That's about as far high as I can go on the scale for this trailer. What this trailer does give me, as with the last one, is a reason to watch it.
Mini Driver.
Not just Mini Driver, but yes, she is one of. I love Mini Driver. Jason Fleming, while he is in a piss load of bad movies, I don't know why, but I still have some sort of nostalgia, I guess. I still cling to the fact that maybe he could be in something good because he was in Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels. Because he played a minor role in Snatch. You know, because that is where I was introduced to him. And that is where I hope he might go again. Or maybe even to a transporter. Because he was in, I think, the third one. Or the second one. Probably the second one. And, you know, I like him. There's also this guy, Rafe Spall, who
has been in a bunch of I don't know him really from comedy. I know him from very serious shows like The Shadowline.
He was in Prometheus. That says Prometheus.
He was in Prometheus, but I forget.
He was the other scientist, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. I think he was a scaredy cat. But Rafe Spall was in one of my favorite English police shows, which is The Shadowline.
Shadow Law.
And he played this terribly disturbed murderer, and he did it fantastically. He was also in A Good Year, and while it's hard for me to justify that movie to anybody who brings a contradictory view, I love that movie to death.
Douglas, yes? Let's get this straight. Rafe Spall is one of the Andes from Hot Fuzz.
That is true. I forgot about that. My word. Okay, I will backtrack and say that I have seen him in comedies, in fantastic comedies, and therefore this movie is going to be awesome. But yet again, that is not why. I should not have to say I want to watch this movie because Rafe Spall is in it. I should say I want to watch this movie because Rafe Spall is in it and the trailer is awesome. And I just can't say that. The trailer is mediocre. It's average. It's okay. The last trailer was even worse than that, Andrew. But, you know, it's unfortunate.
For next year, I think we should take bets, like, based on how we think of these trailers. And then at the end of the year, tally.
Actually, that would be really good. Yeah. I think we really and should do that.
Only if Damien will police it.
Sure.
Because I know Damien loves his spreadsheets.
I do love spreadsheets.
All right. So then, in that case, I'm going to take a bet that the first movie, Broken, is bad. And I'm going to take a bet that this movie is pretty good.
Okay.
All right. Andrew, what are your bets?
Broken, I'm going to put mediocre. Give It a Good Year, I'm going to put on the level of... What was the Jason Segel movie this year?
With, 5-year engagement?
5-year engagement.
All right. You tell me, what did you think of that movie?
I like that movie a lot.
Why'd you say it that way then? You said put it on the level of a 5-year engagement as if 5-year engagement was like, average, okay, not great. And then you say, I love that movie. Why don't you just say it will be really good? How's about that?
Because then you couldn't tell me I was wrong a year from now. I could go back and I could use some...
Speaking of which, you've just dodged a bullet because I really like 5-year engagement as well.
I don't know. Part of me thinks that movie, it has a lot of good points and a lot of bad points.
No, of course.
But
I think
what really holds it up for me is the Elmo scene.
I can't remember that scene, but personally, I think that a 5-year
engagement...
You don't
remember the Elmo scene?
I don't remember it.
So
a 5-year engagement for me is kind of like A Good Year. I know I love it, but I can't defend it. I can't.
I want to go in about the Elmo scene, but damn it, I'm not going to. Right.
I gave my heart and soul to you, girl. Didn't I do it, baby? Didn't I do it?
Allez-vous, Philippe.
C'est qui ce type? Autour de toi, tout le monde s'inquiète.
Bon, il est grand, il est costaud, il a deux bras, deux jambes, un cerveau qui fonctionne, il est en bonne santé.
Frôlons là!
Les gars des cités, ils n'ont aucune pitié.
C'est ce que je veux. Aucune pitié.
Voilà, c'est bon comme ça?
Attends!
C'est un truc de ouf là.
Vous avez fini de jouer, non?
Eh, mais en fait, vous sentez rien du tout là.
Bon appétit.
So, this week I wanted us all to watch.
Technically, last week you wanted.
Technically, last week. I'm going to start out by asking Douglas.
Yes.
No, Damien.
Yes.
What the Untouchables was about? Because I still don't believe they've actually watched the movie.
Fair enough. The Untouchables is a documentary.
I love it. Damien's like, this is documentary. I'm like, wait, what? Hold on. Let me show you what I have. Right. And you're like, wait.
That's not
what I watched.
All right. So The Untouchables is a movie about a paralyzed man and the relationship he has with his caregiver. I'll say up front, this is... what year did this movie come out?
This year?
This is one of my top 10 movies of this year.
Oh, really?
Without doubt.
Thank you! Because, Damien, you don't seem to understand how much my brain exploded last week when you came in and, like, fuck your movies, Andrew. Yeah. Fuck your
movies. this movie...
I think technically it came out, like, in
It came
Europe,
out last
2011,
year in
but
France,
but
it came out this year in the States. So it's counted as this year as far as I'm concerned.
France is barely a country. So the movie, I don't know if any of you guys remember Goodbye Solo.
I do. I was thinking about that movie when I was watching this one.
Right.
That's the one with the taxi driver, right?
Yeah. Untouchables is what would have happened if the Goodbye Solo movie was not only good, but drove past good and ran straight into the phenomenal tree. The movie is... it is so energetic. It is so fun. And it is so...
is it heartwarming?
It is crazy how heartwarming this movie is.
Does it have heart?
So much. But it never feels like it is tugging at anybody's heartstrings. It just makes the movie fun. These two guys, both the caregiver... And
the caretaker.
And the caretaker. They are both jerks. And that is what is so fun. You just their interactions. The situation that there's this rich guy who has lost all the use of his lower body. And so, of course, he needs a caregiver. And there's this guy, he just spent some time in prison. And he went... to the interview to be the caregiver, not to actually get the job, but in order for them to sign a sheet that he applied so that he could file for unemployment. And he was there for about 2 hours, and then he just decided, you know, enough's enough, and he went in and made some jokes. Tried to bang the secretary for the entire movie. And that secretary is... she's fine. Oh, God. And they kind of hit it off. He saw some of himself in this guy, you know, being a hothead, making fun of everything around him. And so they kind of called him back, and everything kind of worked out. And there's trials in the movie, but it's not like... oh,
they're
he
trials,
had to...
but they're not tribulations.
Right. Yes. It's not... I hate Douglas. It's not the typical, oh, you know...
Are we saying that Douglas hasn't fully turned into work Douglas yet?
Not yet.
He's not back at corporate level.
Corporate Douglas is still a ways off. He had
well,
too
today
much
was
free
my
time.
First day, yeah, so I haven't quite time. Gotten into right. it yet.
The job hasn't sucked the joy out of Douglas.
And about half my day was just like... you know, a workshop. Yeah. So, yeah, all right.
But the movie was just these interactions between these two guys and how they got along. And nothing severe happened. There was no life and death situation. In fact, from the start of the movie, you get a sense for their entire relationship and the things that these guys do and, you know, the differences between them and the similarities between them. And that is just carried on throughout the movie. And it was just a joy to be around these two people. They're such jerks, but they're so good with one another. And that you can't help but be smiling at almost everything that they say to each other. Because, you know, that is how, at least, that is how I am with my friends. So I guess that's why I love the movie so much. Because all the jabs that were taken for on both sides are things that I would have done if I was in that situation with one of my friends. I mean, yes, that's probably not the thing that you should do, but it is funnier if you do it. And so I just enjoyed start to finish this movie. It was great. I thank Andrew for giving us this movie, because I'd have never watched this.
So I watched The Untouchables. Mm-hmm.
The documentary?
No, not the documentary.
The Robert De Niro film?
No, not the Robert De Niro film. This French movie. And slowly but surely, about maybe 10 minutes in, I got a whiff that there was some heart here.
Mm-hmm.
I got a whiff. It sounded familiar. And then about 10 minutes in, I realized that I know about this movie already. And I had heard about it when I was big into the BBC. They have this, the radio, the BBC World Service has a program called The Strand, where they talk about all sorts of things, but mainly like cultural and music and the arts, right? Yeah. And so this is one of the things they talked about. And immediately I knew I was going to hate this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I heard what they had to say about the movie a couple of years back, right? So this is a ways back.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, excuse me, a man who takes care of this guy, and I'm supposed to watch this and enjoy that and not be asked to cry on demand? No, I'm not going to watch that movie. And thank you, Andrew, you forced me to watch it. You are an asshole. But this is how strong this movie is.
Good, yes!
Why? Even after 10 minutes in and shutting off and deciding I hated this movie, I ended with a strong average. No, I just joking.
Damn it. I just joking.
No, this was no. This movie. No, this movie. While I disagree with Damien, it is. I don't believe it's top 10 material. It still is pretty decent. It's probably a 7.5.
I don't see anybody walking out of this film going, that movie sucked.
Yeah.
It's impossible.
No.
So Douglas, my question is, when they started to bet each other in the car,
yeah,
is that when your heart turned off? You went,
No. Because at that point, honestly, while I was watching that first few minutes, because you don't quite get that there is any twist here. There is no, this person takes care of that person and that person needs a lot of help, right? I honestly thought that what this was a movie about maybe two cops that were just like, you know, high flyers.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they were driving around in this really expensive car.
Oh, the Maserati is beautiful.
Oh, yeah. And they're doing all sorts of foolishness, and he bets he can outrun the cops, and he doesn't. And yet, after that, he's like, I'm going to bet you that I get them to do escort us. So, actually, I almost thought that I can't remember his name. Lewis? The caretaker.
Driss. Philippe.
Philippe, thank you. So, I almost thought Philippe might be some sort of associate, but not necessarily a policeman. Because I thought he was just going to be like, guys, you know, I'm one of you guys. Just leave me alone and let me win this bet, please. Yeah. Thank you. But then he didn't. And they played this fantastic joke. And it worked well. And it was a fun little time. And so I thought, okay, maybe they're criminals. And then the movie backtracks and actually shows you what's going on. And I'm like, oh, wait. No! And that was when I came to the conclusion that I hated this movie. Because, and you know, I generally get concerned or skeptic when they start to play up one of the actors for his chemistry and his greatness and how young he is
and how little experience he has, and how he's this and the other. That usually means, especially when it's a movie that's supposed to be a heartfelt film, that's gonna be rubbish. But somehow these guys did something really good.
They kind of played it straight. They also, what are the funny things that would happen with these guys? And they didn't. I think they waited to the very end of the movie for there to be something truly heartwarming about the movie. The rest of it was just funny interactions, and that is what I love most about it. It didn't feel forced. It didn't feel like they were trying to get you to cry, or there was none of that there. It was just
trying to get you to smile.
Right, this fun movie.
I think the scene that kind of brings it forward for me is the Earth, Wind and Fire scene, where it's after this party, and Philippe gets the string quartet that's there, whatever they are, to start playing some classical music for Driss, who has been shoving off this music forever. And they just start to play jokes with it. He's like, this sounds like Tom and Jerry or whatever, and they kind of play fun with it. And then he's like, all right, you've had your turn, mine. And then he puts on Earth, Wind and Fire and just starts dancing to it. And I don't care anything else. At that point, it was ear-to-ear smiles for me. And there's so many scenes in this movie which are just like that, from going air gliding. I don't even know if that's the right term for it.
Paragliding.
To the Maserati scene where they're betting each other all of these insane things, and then you even see later Philippe pretending a seizure so that they can get the escort. It's exactly the way Damien said. It's assholes being assholes, but because you sympathize with the assholes, it's enjoyable. It's never in as mean a spirit as you think it will be when it's described like that. The earnestness that comes from Driss when you see how, yes, he's inexperienced, and his inexperience drives him towards being just honest with Philippe. I mean, he even mentions a moment where every once in a while Driss will try to hand him a phone. Just not because he means anything by it, just because he forgets. He just imagines he's with a normal person who is more or less his friend. And I love the movie for things like that. This is top 10 material. I'm not sure if it's in my top 10 yet, but it's a contender at the very least. And if anyone hasn't seen this movie yet, it's my number one recommendation for you to hunt down and find.
Douglas? What in God's name are you doing?
Trying to catch some 3G coverage.
Some what?
He's trying to catch 3G coverage inside of his house.
It's not working very well, though.
Damn right it isn't. Your house is a hole.
I have an H.
I'm sorry, when did this become about drugs? I don't understand.
So Douglas, you complained about certain things just being too heartwarming. Damien and I have mentioned numerous scenes in which they're being assholes.
Yeah. Wait, what? Hold on. What? Wait. sorry. Are you saying that I said that this movie is too heartwarming?
Didn't he? Am I deaf, Damien?
No, he said that was his fear. And that is why he went into this movie. He actively tried to dislike it. And he was won over, but he does not want to admit that the movie is great. But just give him time.
I mean, one of these days he'll just hear the French and be like, yes.
I would bet that it ends up on his top 10.
If we make him watch it again,
I have so many more movies that
no, you do not.
That I can put on the top 10. Listen, no, trust me, I'm gonna be playing it really fast and loose this year with those release dates.
Not like every other year.
Douglas is going to be like my number one film of the year. Listen, is Casino Royale.
Listen, the following is on my top 10 list, okay?
I saw it this year, so don't understand.
Oh man, oh, so
I like this Tumblr. This is pretty good. They're just following redheads. I like this. This is good work.
I guess 2 out of 3 makes this Tump approved in Touchables.
It's actually 2.5.
It's essentially
3 out of 3. How is 7.5 out of 10 not an approval?
Oh, it's out of 10.
Your video, Douglas. Your hesitation to make this movie. Don't write the best film of the year.
Hold on. So what you're saying is that if I don't say that a movie is the best movie of the year, it's top automatically a bad movie.
If you don't say it's
movie?
Top 10, it's a bad movie. Yes, Douglas, that's exactly what you're saying. Let me prove it to you. Looper.
Okay, top 10.
All right. Casino Royale. Wow. Skyfall.
Probably top 10 at this point.
All right. The Master.
Top 10.
Avengers.
Probably not top 10.
All right. So you don't. Right. And you didn't like Avengers. Thank you. There we go. Job done. Damian wins. Flawless victory.
Oh. At least you didn't say anything about 126 hit combos.
Supreme combo.
So at this point, I guess we have to say goodnight.
Tumblr is weird.
This has been the Odd Name Movie Podcast. You can find the podcast over at gmanreviews.com or through iTunes. I put up all my writings over at gmanreviews.com. Douglas is on Twitter, he's DJ Arloff, his name. Damien is Damien_White. I am at G-Man Reviews. And please don't watch bad movies.
Yeah, okay. Guys, let's stop watching bad movies. Like that. Shut your ass, girl, you shut me up for sigh. We'll get the other guys. You'll never fall. It's time you go. Hold tight. Hold tight, make me feel what you say is for real. And hold tight, carousel, girl, you're Henry and my villain. Hold tight, cable fly, swing it, no swing.